This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
One of the ways that Joko used to talk about practice was to say that we're learning to suffer intelligently. It wasn't immediately clear what it meant to suffer intelligently. And we generally had to approach it by looking at what it meant to suffer unintelligently, our usual way of suffering. And that meant suffering from a self-centered point of view, starting with it as my suffering, something that is happening to me, and proceeding down the usual byways of why are they treating me like this? Why am I not getting what I want? Why is life treating me so badly? All these ways of blaming and externalizing the cause of suffering. Or on the other hand, internalizing them and saying, why did I screw up so badly? What have I done wrong? Living a life of self-reproach and regret and self-hate. See, these two forms of suffering are preoccupied with the cause and unfairness of suffering, and whether you blame others or blame yourself. For Joko, this was simply a self-centered and unintelligent way to suffer, a kind of suffering that you would never learn from. And that's why she basically called it unintelligent. See, in that kind of suffering, no matter how much of that kind of suffering you do, you learn nothing. You just dig the hole of self-centeredness deeper, the hole of resentment or self-hate. See, it's just an unproductive suffering that just feeds on itself. Joko thought we needed to practice with suffering by using it as a kind of grindstone. A grindstone that's just sort of constantly spinning and up against which we put our expectations to have them endlessly abraded and worn out by the reality of suffering. All those expectations of being treated a certain way. All those expectations of how life was supposed to go, all those expectations of the kind of mastery or self-control or invulnerability I expect to have over myself, all the ways I expect to get an exemption from impermanence and karma. See, if we make explicit to ourselves all these expectations, then when we suffer, there's the potential, she thought, to use the suffering to wear down our expectations, not a way to make the suffering into a shovel into which we just dig ourselves into a deeper hole. Right? And one of the simplest versions of that that she taught in the Zendo was that the Zendo exists as a kind of laboratory of suffering in a couple basic ways. One, which is the forms and rules, rituals of the Zendo are just what they are. By and large, nobody is interested in if it's the way you would like it to be. But it's an opportunity for you to watch your expectations of how you expect life to organize itself for your comfort and convenience. And how everybody will come to a Zendo and think those rules mostly apply to everybody else, but I have an exemption. And if I want to cut corners, if I don't want to do this part of it, if I don't like the chanting, if I don't like this or that, well, I don't have to do it, right? That whole kind of have it your way mentality was, for her, the definition of self-centeredness. And the point was to use the forms to wear that down. Same was true of pain and sitting still. She thought basically that sitting with restlessness or discomfort and even high degrees of physical pain were ways in which we learned to simply suffer intelligently, to suffer an experience, a physical experience, directly without our usual attempts at avoidance or control. In general, we could say that our self-centeredness, as it extends out of the Zendo in the world in the face of suffering, faces two kinds of ditches. One, the ditch of mastery, and the other, the ditch of resignation. Either we are in a constant, endless struggle to try to manipulate or control our worlds to avoid suffering, or we fall into a kind of helpless despair, feeling that our agency and choice is pointless, and we just sort of go limp in the face of suffering. Neither of those are appropriate ways to face and respond to difficulty in our lives. I had a chance to hear a very dramatic example of one of the alternatives to that model, an exemplar of intelligent suffering. When Congressman John Lewis spoke at Cooper Union the other night, John Lewis was at the forefront of the civil rights movement, from the earliest days when he first heard about Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King and said to himself, that's the kind of person I want to be. And he said where he grew up in the South, everybody around him would say, keep your head down, don't get in trouble. But he said that the lesson of Dr. King was sometimes you have to get into the right kind of trouble, which in its way is its own version of suffering intelligently. And with Dr. King, he learned the principle of nonviolent resistance, which I think is actually very profound and hard to really understand and master. See, in those days, they were trying to teach people to get in trouble, to suffer intelligently when they did things like sit in at lunch counters or desegregate buses or march where there were no permits. And when they did those things, they were faced with angry and often violent mobs of people who would curse at them, spit on them as they sat at the lunch counter. And in John Lewis's case, beat them to within an inch of their life sometimes. Now, the hard part of nonviolent resistance was not simply a matter of sitting still and bearing it, of taking it, of non-reacting. Of course, it meant, you know, when someone spit at you, you didn't jump up and slug them. That's just sitting still in the face of it. Now, I think the hard part, and what Dr. King emphasized, is that not simply that we're there to not react, but we're there not to hate. That you're there to insist that no matter how much you're treated as a hated other, you're there to insist that we're one people. That love and justice means we will not divide ourselves into us and them. Even when we're spit upon, even when we're beaten. See, if you just think that resistance means non-reactivity, well, then it becomes almost a kind of stoic acceptance of pain. It can be analogous to sitting in the Zendo in pain for hours and hours and just cultivating toughness. I'll take whatever they give me, right? I can endure anything. That's a virtue, and it'll take you so far. But it's not the virtue of non-duality. It's not the virtue of love. But when I listen to John Lewis, I really hear a master of suffering intelligently. Someone who learned to suffer without hating, without falling into that dualism. I feel very stupid in comparison.